Hello, everyone. This is your host, Manoj Tandon. Welcome to another episode of Dark Rhino Security, Security Confidential. Today, we have another awesome guest. He is Frank Riccardi. Frank has over 25 years of experience in cybersecurity. He's a former C-level executive in the healthcare industry. He has a lot of experience developing compliance and privacy programs for very large health systems. And, you know, he's the author of the book, Mobilizing the C-Suite, Waging War Against Cyber Attacks. And that's just scratching the surface of what he is. He's about practical advice and taking practical actions. And welcome to the show, Frank. Thank you so much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here, Manoj. I appreciate it. Thank you.
So, you know, this is you can't pick up a newspaper oftentimes, unfortunately, or a website where you don't see a data breach in the healthcare industry. So your timing is very appropriate to be able to gracing our forum here. But were you always a cyber person? Is that how?
By accident. So I've been in the healthcare field for 25 years. And, hospitals and physician practices were, which is where I worked. I worked for big healthcare systems and just daily breaches and cyber attacks. And I worked my way over the years to chief privacy and compliance officer roles. And in those roles, I had a lot of experience, unfortunately, with managing data breaches and ransomware and private cyber attacks and so forth. So over the years, I developed a deep expertise in cybersecurity as well as data privacy.
Wow. And you sound fairly motivated. What's the secret to that, given all the bad things that have happened in the healthcare sector in this regard?
In 2021, there were a spate of cyber attacks. And you recall in 2021 is just a terrible year. You had the rise of the Delta virus, so COVID-19 was raging.
Yep.
You had a lot of political issues, the January 6th riot in the Capitol, the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan. Mood was bad. And on top of that, we had three horrible cyber attacks. So there was a cyber attack on Schreiber Foods, and they were a big dairy conglomerate in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. There was a cyber attack on JBS Foods, which is a big meat packing plant, but their meat packing plants in the United States were shut down. So what you had with these two cyber attacks with Schreiber Foods, that was one of the causes of the great cream cheese shortage of 2021. You couldn't get a schmear on your bagel. That makes people grouchy. And with the JBS shutdown, you couldn't get a ham and turkey sandwich. Not only does that make people grouchy, but now they're worried about their food security. But the worst one was Colonial Pipeline, and that was in May of 2021. And what happened there is there was a ransomware cyber attack. And basically, the executive shut down the pipeline. And the pipeline, Colonial Pipeline, had a pipeline that stretched from Texas to New Jersey. So it was 5,500 miles of pipeline. And it was shut down for a week along the East Coast. And if you think things make people grouchy, I can't get a schmear on my bagel. I can't get meat. And now on top of that, I can't fill up my SUV. So people are now, for the first time, making the connection that cyber attacks and ransomware, it's not just something ethereal that happens in cyberspace. And it's not just about data breaches. It can happen in the physical world. It can affect me in the physical world. And then with all the congressional hearings over Colonial Pipeline, the public learns why the cyber attack was successful. So with Colonial Pipeline, like a lot of other companies in the pandemic, they let their employees work remote and they set up VPN accounts. So they had an employee that would log in with a VPN. That employee quit, went working somewhere else. It's believed that the employee, the password that was used for the VPN account was a reused password that employee used somewhere else. Well, it got stolen, and we don't know how it got stolen, but there was a cyber criminal gang called DarkSide, and they were a Russian cyber criminal gang. Somehow they got the stolen reused password, and they put it in the VPN, so essentially a credential stuffing attack, and it worked. Now, what the public learns is they say, well, wait a minute. When that employee left the company, why didn't Colonial Pipeline shut down that VPN? That's a common internal control. Had Colonial Pipeline done that, the cyber attack wouldn't happen. The other thing is the pipeline wasn't, the VPN was not protected by multi-factor authentication. Had MFA been enabled, DarkSide wouldn't have been able to get in even with the password because they wouldn't have the one-time numeric code. So this changes the paradigm. The public is really mad at cyber criminals for these cyber attacks. But now what happens is if the cyber attack happened because the company failed to implement basic cyber hygiene, like a basic control like MFA, or not letting your employees access SIF systems when they leave the company, or even teaching employees about the dangers of reused passwords. If it's simple controls that were not implemented, what happens is the public is now just as angry at the C-suite as they are at the cyber criminals. And one of the reasons I wrote the book is I wanted executives to understand there is a greater degree of accountability now than there has been in the past for them to make sure they support a cybersecurity program and to understand basic cyber hygiene so that they can shepherd the organization to thwarting these cyber attacks.
Have you gotten any feedback from them?
Yes and no. Most of the feedback that I've gotten is very positive. The book's doing very well. When I give presentations, executives get a little bit worried about it because, you know, they do enterprise risk assessments and they usually, the internal audit division or whoever's doing it, puts cybersecurity straight at the top. And so they're scared about it. I think they do realize that they have a greater degree of accountability than they do in the past. I don't think they understand why, but when they read my book and I give them the presentation and they make the connection, you know, if there's one cyber attack a non-technical executive needs to know, it's the Colonial Pipeline cyber attack. And once you understand that, all of the new regulations that are coming out, the Securities and Exchange Commission, there was a congressional a law that came out. The Federal Trade Commission is doing a lot of work. There's a lot of enforcement. All of that is flowing from the damage done by Colonial Pipeline. And if you understand that, if you have to only understand one cyber attack, that's the one to understand. And then you will understand your level of accountability.
Are there unique regulations in healthcare that have come to light that are further mandating healthcare systems to report on and take care of cyber in a different way than what it was in the past?
I would say HIPAA. The HIPAA has always really, required healthcare organizations to step up with cybersecurity. And the Office for Civil Rights and other organizations have always been mandating requirements and so forth. So, for example, encrypting laptops, something as simple as that. Healthcare organizations, if they're giving their employees laptops, these have to be encrypted, and there has to be workforce education on the encryption, because encryption is thwarted if an employee can't remember the password, so they put it on a sticky note and stick it on the laptop, and it gets stolen in a smash and grab. So you have to educate the employees. Don't put a sticky note with the password on the laptop. And then if you're traveling, put the laptop in the trunk. Don't leave it on your car seat. Because the fines and penalties for a lost laptop that's not encryption, or if the encryption is bypassed, is going to be astronomical. So I don't think there's necessarily regulations that are making enhanced requirements. I think they've always been there. I just think that you have federal agencies that are promulgating rules, making requirements, doing enforcement actions. Like the Office for Civil Rights, they've been saying for a long time, if you lose a laptop and there's data on it and it's not encrypted, get ready to write a check.
Wow. And is that only in healthcare, or is that then anybody?
I would think it's anybody. I mean, I can only
imagine.
If it's
Office of Civil Rights, I can't believe that would just be limited to healthcare somehow.
I would say this, and I say this in my book to executives when we're talking about encryption. Don't get hung up on the laws. Don't get hung up on the regulations. All you need to know is this. If you have data on a mobile device and it gets lost and it's not encrypted, get ready to write a check. Because whoever's going to enforce it, whether it's the FBI, the Department of Justice, the Office for Civil, whatever it is, they're going to throw the book at you if it's a breach of unencrypted data they are going to throw the book at you. So you don't need to know what the regulations are. You just need to know it's a big risk that you have to be careful with.
As you were talking, one thing that occurred to me is, do you think the C-suite understands that cybersecurity is a business problem and not an IT problem?
I don't know that they do. So my experience in healthcare is vast majority of C-suite executives that I've worked for, they come from a variety of disciplines. I mean, they might be, you know, former doctors, they might be former people in marketing, they might be in legal, they might be human resources, they could be in operations and they work their way up. But they don't really come from an IT background. And I don't know that they see cybersecurity as a something that is a business enhancer, especially for this age of digital transformation. I mean, digital transformation can do wonders for an organization, but sometimes I think cybersecurity is just not considered. It may be looked at as an add-on or more as a risk and less as a business opportunity. And it really is a business opportunity because the public is becoming more and more savvy about cybersecurity. And people very often may choose a more expensive option or a different option because they feel more comfortable with the security. So I think there's still a way to ways to go in the C-suite. And I think there's a lot of education and discussions to be had.
Yeah. My reason for asking it is like you look at, as you very eloquently stated, Colonial Pipeline, mm-hmm. right? So yes, they could have shut it down, with MFA. That was absolutely one way to deal with that vulnerability, right? Mm-hmm. The other way was you didn't need any technology whatsoever. It was a question of process. And this is the part that bothers me personally, because mm-hmm. when we talk to companies, a lot of times they're just concerned about tech, you know, mm-hmm. more tech. I'm going to throw more tech at it. Well, a lot of things are cyber hygiene mm-hmm. that you don't need any tech for other than a pencil and a paper and yeah. someone diligently tracking it. So had they deprovisioned Correct. That gentleman that had left, yeah. right? That yeah. doesn't require any tech. All that does is somebody in IT had to go in and yeah. turn their access off.
You just need a policy and procedure that just says the human resources department, when an employee leaves the workforce, there's a process to notify the IT department, and then the IT department terminates their access within 24 hours. That's all you need, and it doesn't need to be fancy.
Right. And I can tell you, as a professional in this industry, we have seen it time and time again that the deprovisioning part of the cycle mm-hmm. is often broken. It's broke. And mm-hmm. no one is really going in there and auditing it. You know, mm-hmm. there needs to be an identity lifecycle. When you use the term identity lifecycle, now that becomes a techie thing. It should be a personnel lifecycle. So mm-hmm. when someone joins, when Manoj joins, this yeah. is what's going to happen. When he yeah. leaves, this is what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's just someone going through the checklist, like yeah. pilots do at takeoff. Yeah. Flaps set, you know, we got gas in the tank. Yeah,
it's definitely something that should be audited periodically, because it's not just about the cyber attack. But what if Frank Riccardi leaves the organization and he's an aggrieved employee and he's mad at somebody and he's still going in the systems? I mean, you know, so it's not just a cyber attack because someone's going to do a ransomware cyber attack. It's just bad practice to let your employees still have access to your systems.
Yeah, but I guarantee you, if we randomly just threw a dart at a healthcare system in this country, you could pick anyone. I don't care if it was Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, mm-hmm. or Joe's rural doc shop. I would absolutely bet good money that we would find process issues. Mm-hmm. The technology might be there, but as an example, right. even if you have MFA, Frank, mm-hmm. what kind of policies have you put on top of MFA? What does right. MFA look like, right? Have you geofenced your MFA, right?
Well, and have you explain to your workforce, because, you know, people don't realize MFA is bypassed. You know, it's not perfect. There's no perfect countermeasure. You look at, there was a cyber attack in 2021 against Twitter, and it was a spear phishing attack. And what you had is you had three basically teenage cyber criminals. One was a guy who's 19 years old from Boca Raton, Florida. And what they did is they went on the Twitter website and they got the HR policy and procedures, and they found out, oh, we found these four people that are super users. And when there's a problem, they can go in and reset the password, but they can also retract a tweet or add a tweet or do all these things. So what they did is they found out that the VPN network was slow, and these cyber criminals called these four employees, and they pretended to be from the help desk. And they said, hi, I'm from the help desk. I understand your VPN is slow. I can help you. Let's reset the password. So they directed the employees to a fake website that looked like the Twitter website, and the employees put their username and password there. In real time, the cyber criminal saw it and then put the password in the real Twitter website. And that happened is it generated an MFA request. And they just said to the person, oh, an MFA request is going to come. Go ahead and approve it. And they did. And so the cyber criminals got access to the Twitter account. They got access to Elon Musk, President Obama, all these celebrities. And then they launched all these tweets and they said, hi, I'm President Obama. I'm Elon Musk. If you send me $1,000 in Bitcoin, I'll give you $2,000 just to pay it back forward. And they actually gave the link to the cryptocurrency. And it's laughable, but they netted $100,000 in Bitcoin. It worked.
Well, you know, it's genius. I mean, it's crazy. One thing that that's the other side of this. You know, when people think about cyber criminals, Frank, as soon as you use the term criminal, people have this image of a guy with a knife or a gun on the street, you know, some kind of a thug type stereotype, right? Whatever that.
Put on your hoodie.
Yeah. Whatever the thug. Get your hoodie. Like. Yeah. And cyber bad actors they might wear a hoodie, but they're extremely intelligent people.
They are.
And they're exploiting process. And what you described there was a stunningly beautiful example of exploiting a process. And none of that exploitation really involved technology other than they didn't really hack anything. They were given access, right?
Let me give you another example, because Manoj, you've hit something. At the end of the day, it really isn't so much the technology, it's the trickery behind the technology. The technology doesn't actually work without the trickery. And I'll give you a good example. You probably have a lot of pen testers and ethical hackers that tune into the show. So they're all familiar with a device called the Wi-Fi pineapple.
Yeah.
And it's called a pineapple. It's got these spiky antenna, even though it doesn't look like a pineapple, and it's sold by a company called Hack5. And it's just a glorified Wi-Fi access point. So, you know, if I'm going to get a cup of coffee at a coffee shop, I'm looking on the ceiling and there's a device and it's the good wireless access point. And that's what I want my smartphone to connect to. But a cyber criminal will use a device like a pineapple and they'll call it an evil twin because they're trying to get you to connect to that instead of the good one. Once they do that, they can try to trick you to go on a fake website. Fake website is called an evil portal. And so they'll try. It's really a phishing scam, a high-tech phishing scam to get you to put credit card information or username and password so that they can steal it. But here's the thing. The Wi-Fi pineapple is a useless piece of junk if you just know when I go to a coffee shop, it's an insecure network. And maybe I shouldn't be checking my Charles Schwab account, making trades or buying stuff on Amazon. And if I am, hey, I'm looking in the address bar. Where's that padlock? Oh, maybe the site's not encrypted. Or why does it not say HTTPS? Where's the S? It's just HTTP. What's going on? Maybe it's not encrypted. Maybe I better get the heck off. Or better yet, maybe a coffee shop is just meant for coffee and a newspaper. You know, but once you understand the trick, the trickery, the technology is almost an afterthought. And, you know, when you're trying to explain these things to executives or your grandfather, your grandmother, your dad, I like to talk about the technology, but then I like to talk about it's really the trickery. And once you know it's the trickery, the technology won't bother you.
That is employee awareness training. That is, that's the crux of cyber right there. That's why this is a business problem and not an IT problem, right?
It's not.
It's a human behavioral issue. I mean, we had a gentleman from the CIA on whose professional paid life was for many years to get people to do illegal things in other countries.
I know.
And I asked him, I said, how hard is it to compromise a human being? And I'm just paraphrasing because I don't remember his exact answer, but it was, it's really easy to compromise people. They're so believing.
Yeah.
A lot of times they'll just give up the information. They don't even know that they gave it up. And this is that pineapple is exactly that. You're giving up your username and password. And I guarantee you that username and password has probably been reused 1,000 times in some other places. So now once I have it, now I'll try and get into your Netflix account.
Yep. Yeah, the human factor, they say the human factor is the weakest link in cybersecurity. And you brought up a reused password. There's studies that show that when companies force their employees to reset their password every 90 days, employees don't reset the whole password. They just put an exclamation point at the end of it. So they'll just change one character of the password. And cyber criminals know this when they're doing their password cracking methodologies or where they're trying to figure things out.
Oh yeah.
It's just human nature. There's other studies to show that really human beings cannot remember 100 different passwords. And so it just makes it very easy for people to want to reuse their passwords, but it's an incredible risk that needs to be explained as part of cyber
then
hygiene.
We should be, then that gets to, again, this is now a process and policy thing that should we go to passwordless systems as much as possible. And in cases where we need a password, why aren't we using password managers with incredibly complicated passwords so that people are forced to use a password manager because they're not going to type in a 22-digit long thing that, is some encrypted gobbledygook. But that's, again, that's a policy directive. That's not a technology directive, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I hope that people listening get that across, that there's so much to be done from a policy or internal. Do people audit their internal processes from a cybersecurity view, Frank? Is that happening in healthcare?
I don't know if it's happening enough. I mean, really, when you have a cybersecurity program, one of the things you should be doing is an annual risk assessment. And that should be part of the annual risk assessment. What processes do we need to look at? And I think the example of not terminating them when someone leaves the organization is one. But you have to do a risk assessment and just try to figure out, because you can't audit everything and it just gets to be an overwhelming task, but it would be part of a risk assessment to figure that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you a simple question. Why are healthcare organizations almost universally asking for an individual's name, address, and then the final trifecta is the social security number? I always refuse to provide my social security number to a medical establishment. Yeah. And they get really upset about it. They don't like that.
Yeah. My guess is that it's the same reason that many others do. But when I was working in healthcare, you'd be surprised how many people have the same last name. And you can have people that with the same last name in a community. And so one part of it is they're trying to find a unique identifier to make sure that they've got the right patient. Another part of it, and this is perhaps a darker side, is there's a whole discussion to be had around healthcare organizations going after patients when they can't pay. And I think they want to have as much financial information as possible for some of those processes as well. So I think there's probably a lot of reasons for it. Some good, some not so good. But I don't think the reasons for that are any different than any other business. But I agree with you. I don't like giving that out.
So if you think about it now, the risk on both sides, once you have my name, address, and social security number, you don't need me. You now have a person.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, and on that form, all medical forms have date of birth, name, address, social security number. Now I am irrelevant as a human being. At that point, if you have that data, you can go to Chase Bank, fill out a form, or fill it out online, be anonymous.
Yeah.
And you could create an account with my name, and I won't know heck about it.
No, no.
And then you can commit all kinds of financial fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is I'll get stuck with the bill. And there was a court case recently, and this was with the gentleman who lost $20 million because his phone got SIM swapped, and that's how they bypassed his MFA.
Wow. Okay. Okay,
so they paid off an internal support agent at AT&T $200 and said, "Hey man, I need you to transfer this SIM to my phone." And now guess what? All your MFA requests.
But there again is a good example. Cyber criminals bypassed, not with technology. They just bribed somebody.
But here's what happened. They said AT&T was not liable, or T-Mobile, whoever the carrier was. The courts ruled that they're not liable for the $20 million in damages.
Wow.
So in the case of a healthcare situation, I would imagine a savvy attorney is going to probably cite that case.
I would guess so.
If somebody commits fraud with your name, Frank, and you go after that healthcare system and sue them, you have no recourse.
I don't know what the law is around it, but it just seems to me that an organization, whether it's AT&T, Verizon, or a healthcare system, they ought to be accountable and responsible for crimes like that that are committed with their information by their employees. I mean, you know, there should be some level of accountability, but I certainly understand the frustration.
Well, I also see it even on the side of the healthcare system. If you're storing people's core identities and then that data is stolen from your environment, there has to be a real liability on you. Even today, if not from me, then at least federal agencies, someone's going to come after you if you give up everybody's data.
Absolutely. I think the liability is just off the charts for data breaches and cyber attacks. So, and not just for healthcare, but I think the liability is off the charts. And, you know, some C-suite leaders have lost their jobs over it because of cyber attacks, some famous cases. So accountability is indeed high.
Going to healthcare breaches, Frank, we were briefly talking pre-show, and one of the things, if we study them, you'll find recurring patterns that happen over and over again as to how these systems are compromised.
Yeah.
Why is the healthcare industry not able to plug the holes? What's the problem?
So I think it's a couple of things, and not any one more important than the other. But one reason is they are being targeted by cyber criminals a lot more than other organizations because of they're sitting on a mountain of very valuable data. But more important than that, they service a very vulnerable population. And so if you're a cyber criminal and you can shut down a nursing home or shut down a hospital, it's not a white collar crime, it's a threat to life crime. And nothing gets a hospital administrator's attention more than having to turn away patients because these patients could die or nursing home residents could die if they're not getting their medication. So it's a real patient safety issue. So it's not so much trying to get the operations up and running to get the business going. You know, lives are in jeopardy. So they tend to be hit a lot more, I think, than other organizations. And so I think it's just cyber criminals have a lot of attention on hospitals and physician practices. I think the other piece of it, too, is that there is a misperception that hospitals and physician practices and other healthcare providers make a lot of money and have a lot of profit, and they don't. Many organizations, rural health systems, health care organizations, you know, are barely making it. And so they don't have all the money and the wherewithal to spend on cybersecurity, even if they think that they need to. So I think there is budget problems. I think the third problem is that not a problem, but another issue is that in healthcare, a lot of people that make it to the top in the C-suite, they come from areas that are not directly in IT. You might be, you know, it could be a physician, you could be a healthcare provider, you could be in marketing, HR, legal, operations. And so you're concerned about a lot of risks and a lot of things and a lot of issues, and not necessarily just cybersecurity. So I think that the healthcare industry has struggled more than other industries. A good example is critical infrastructure like utility companies. They're putting tons and tons and tons of money into cybersecurity. Big bank companies and financial companies like JP Morgan. I think JP Morgan puts $1 billion a year into cybersecurity. They have huge programs. The hospital industry does not have the financial bandwidth to be able to do that. And so cyber criminals are, they know that they don't have the bandwidth to have all the cybersecurity controls in place necessarily. They know that they're sitting on a mountain of data that the cyber criminals can monetize. And they know if they can shut down a hospital, a physician practice, or a nursing home with ransomware, the motivation to pay the ransom is going to be pretty high because people could die. So I think healthcare is really in the crosshairs for cyber attacks, and there definitely needs to be, and actually I think there is now, attention at the federal level to try to help healthcare organizations, you know, fend off these cyber attacks and deal with what they need to do to get their programs and their systems, you know, cyber ready and cyber resilient.
One question that comes to mind, and you mentioned that a lot of these systems, there's a perception that hospitals make a lot of money. I guess there is that, and I'd love for you to daylight when you look at, and this is the charges from a hospital, especially if you don't have insurance and you get billed mm-hmm. off a charge master in the hospital.
Yeah.
You get these ridiculous bills that no yeah. one can afford to pay. Mm-hmm. How is it someone taking in that kind of cash can't, where did the money go?
You have, listen, I could have a conversation with you about reimbursement, but the charge master and the billing, it's Byzantine, it's complex, but what gets charged and billed is not what they actually get. And what organizations get from Medicare or Blue Cross or other payers, particularly private payers, is based on contract. And there's a lot of competition. You may have two or three big hospitals in an area, you know, in a town that can really only support one hospital, and they're competing with each other. And so the hospital field is really struggling financially. They always have been for a long time, and it's not a big money making process. I'll tell you, people that go into healthcare, executives that go into healthcare, they don't go into it to make money. They go into it because they truly care about the patients. They're on a mission, especially some of these faith-based healthcare systems, beautiful, beautiful faith-based missions. So it's a little bit of it's a different kind of, I don't even want to call it a business, a profession, where money is only part of it, but it's patient safety, it's spiritual and physical well-being of the community, it's community benefit. But I will tell you, vast majority of hospitals are really, really, really struggling financially.
Well, that's something I did not, my impression was totally different. So thanks, Frank.
Well, somebody might have a different opinion, but that's mine.
No, I'd rather hear from someone that's been in the business as to what the heck is going on here. Mm-hmm. Because it just doesn't come across that way when you look at healthcare premiums and what, mm-hmm. what all of us who are on the payer side of it.
Listen, I'm a user of healthcare too. And when I see my copay and deductible and how much it costs, but you think about healthcare services, they're heavily labor intensive, they're heavily technology intensive. I just don't see the hospital industry as being, it's beleaguered. Honestly, it's beleaguered.
So, you know, and that, that gets back to what our conversation on cyber there is, that maybe take a brief pause on the tech and audit your processes and really,
exactly,
you know, because you might be able to get a huge bang for your buck there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Focus on the human factor, you know, yeah, the focus on human beings and the processes and how departments are working together. Try not to have silos, but technology is only a piece of the puzzle. The human side is probably 95% of it.
So let's talk about your book a little bit more in detail.
Sure. You know,
who should be reading it, other than the obvious C-suite person, but who should be reading it?
Yeah, I mean, anybody in any organization that's wants to understand cyber hygiene, just basic cyber hygiene. If you're an employee in an organization or an executive and you don't know a lot about cybersecurity, this book is a quick read and it'll bring you up to snuff and you'll understand basic cyber hygiene. You'll understand the countermeasures. For every countermeasure, you have strong passwords, MFA, encryption, and so forth. For every measure you have, a cyber criminal can defeat it, and you'll learn how they can defeat it. You'll learn some of the technology, but you'll understand that it's the trickery and the scam that's actually more important than the technology. Very often, the technology doesn't work without the trickery. And then I also talk about different risks. You know, there's shadow IT is a big risk. Offshoring is a big risk. Not having good data backups is a big risk. So anybody that wants to learn about cybersecurity at an organization, how to protect yourself. And it's a great book to teach cyber hygiene to your company.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, Frank, we're at the hour here and I wanted to, is there anything you'd like to plug? I want to give you the floor for a couple minutes.
Well, thank you. I guess if your listeners are interested in my work and what I do, I'd appreciate if they go to my LinkedIn profile, and if they go to my LinkedIn profile, they can connect or follow me. And there's a bell to the right of my picture. If you click on the bell, you'll always get my posts. And I post frequently on cybersecurity issues and privacy issues. But I also post about dogs. I post about classic rock vinyl albums. And I even posted about my 105-year-old watch that is in my family from my grandfather's railroad watch. So a lot of fun things if you want to connect or follow.
This was fantastic.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed being on your show and I enjoyed the conversation. It was wonderful.
I learned a few new things and I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day to do this. This has been really good, Frank. And we've only scratched the surface.
I know.
There's
a lot to talk about.
There's a lot to talk about here. But thank you so much.